Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer. In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
It's Christmas morning of 2022. For most people, that means family, food, maybe a quiet day in pajamas. For Brian Koberger, it meant logging onto his phone and pulling up profiles of more than 20 serial killers. Not just a casual click, detailed dives into their methods, their histories, their ability to evade capture, as it was sneaking up on Brian. And right there, near the top of the list, Danny Rowling, the Gainesville Ripper, who, like Koberger, attacked college students, used a K-bar-style knife, and gained entry through sliding doors. We now know this wasn't the first time Rowling's name crossed his radar. Koberger might have studied him under Catherine Ramsland, who chronicled Rowling's crimes, but the timing here, weeks after the Idaho murders, while law enforcement was zeroing in on his white Hyundai Elantra, it's hard to ignore. Was this morbid curiosity, self-comparison, or was it tactical? An after-action review to identify mistakes and fine-tune his methods if there was going to be a next time. And remember, by Christmas, he'd already been stopped twice in Indiana on the drive home to Pennsylvania with his dad. He knew the knife sheath had been left behind at the scene. He was moving trash in gloves, depositing in his neighbor's bin. He had to know the circle was tightening. So what does a man like Koberger do with that pressure? According to former FBI Special Agent Robin Drake, he doesn't innovate. He copies. He studies others who've been in the crosshairs and looks for lessons he can steal. The Danny Rowling parallels are eerie, not just in method, but in what happens after. Rowling hid his weapon, claimed it was stashed away rather than destroyed. Some believe Koberger may have done the same. And if true, that's not a coincidence. It's mimicry. In this segment, Robin and I will dig into that Christmas day and that search and that spree that tells us about Koberger's mindset. Was he looking for ways to cover his tracks, studying how long others stayed free before capture, trying to reassure himself he could still get away with it, or simply feeding the same obsessive hollow need for identity that's driven him to copy others at every turn? Robin, when you see that Christmas Day data, the number of killers he researched, the methods he focused on, the timing of all of it, what's your read? Was this paranoia setting in, or was this Brian Koberger preparing for his next move?
I don't think the date matters to him.
Yeah.
For one thing, Christmas, you know, it's just another day.
Yeah.
No, so I don't think it's tied to anything. I think it's probably tied into when the house is quiet, no one's around because it's Christmas. Maybe everyone's sleeping late, but him.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a convenient time. I don't think it regards Christmas at all as an event in his life. Researching all these other people, though, that was interesting. I took a deeper dive on a few of them that he was looking at because I just think he's studying more. It's literally came down. All right, I got away with this one. I got to do a deeper dive. I think he's just constantly taking in data for trying to do something better. It's like, you know, like I'm thinking he's, you know, what I learned from Ramsland was good, but I think I can do better. You know, let me expand my network of individuals I'm researching to kind of look at nooks and crannies. What did I miss? What could I do better next time? Because remember, he's only a mass murderer, but most of our conjecture is that it was going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's researching. Why wouldn't he do it again? So
and he hadn't been caught yet. Yeah, I mean, it had been weeks. I wonder if he thought he was getting away with it. I mean, what do you think?
Or he had loose ends of what he needed to take care of, mm-hmm. like knives or blood or clothes, or there's things that he was ruminating on in his head doing an after action report that he didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to figure out what to do is he doesn't innovate anything on his own. He looks it up in someone else. And so my theory is there's loose ends that he thinks he could have done better. So what am I doing? I'm going to research other people, not me. I'm going to research other people and see what they did.
The people he was researching, and I don't know if you know the answer to this. I think you looked into it more than I did. The people, the serial killers, the mass murderers that he was looking up, I'm wondering how long they evaded capture. And I'm wondering if at that moment in time, he had a feeling the walls were closing in. Because by this moment, they're looking for the car. They're looking for his, he knows that they're onto his car. And if they're onto his car, that's kind of scary. Shit, I got that car. How do they know that? They know something about me. He knows the knife sheath was left behind. He's concerned about that. I'm wondering, and he's sitting there with gloves on, moving things and packing his trash and putting it in the neighbors. There's a level of paranoia going on here. I'm wondering if he was researching these other 20 killers to see the tactics that they used to evade police capture when they thought maybe things were closing in. I'm wondering if he was trying to learn another lesson from those. I'd have to look at the list of who he was looking up because I didn't do that. I just read the headline and a bit of the story.
Yeah, so the big one he was mirroring, looking at a lot of, was Danny Rawling.
Okay.
And he had a striking over. So this is the guy that actually attacked using a K-bar as well.
No shit. Okay.
And parallels a lot of the things that he was doing, like attacking through the screen door, sliding doors, secreting the weapon in a, he said, at least in a barn afterwards, or abandoned something or other, like the theory that I have of that he didn't dump it in the river, that is actually in a hidey hole someplace. This guy did exactly the same thing. At least he said he did in prison after the fact. And so the MO of this guy, Rawlings, seems to fit. And I don't think he studied Rawling under Ramsland either. So that's why he's a conglomeration, a lot of, like we all are, you know, we learn a lot of lessons from a lot of people and then we make it our own and innovate ourselves. But he, that's not what Koberger did. He definitely, or BK, so we don't give him a name.
Yeah.
He definitely did not innovate anything. He's just constantly copying someone on something. So that's what he's taken from Rawling, it looked like.
He was arrested 11 days after his murder, or Rawling was. This happened in 1990.
But I thought he had a series of them that he got away with for a number of years first.
From his last murder, you're right.
Right.
To the arrest, you're right. So he did get away for quite some time. There's a whole, I just did a little type in ChatGPT, and there's a whole other show we can do about the similarities here between those two.
Yeah.
That's for next time.
The interesting thing, and Tony, you brought up a really interesting thing too. And I thought at the very, very beginning of this about him being caught actually bagging up his trash at home and mm-hmm. taking a lot of care of it. That was interesting because did he think that they're on to him already? Even though his first words that they've reported out of his mouth were, what was it?
Did you arrest anybody else? Something to that
right.
nature.
Yeah. Something to the effect that, you know, not just me, someone else. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, because again, I'm having a hard time overlaying the fact that he seemed very, very stovepiped mm-hmm. with his pre-event, the event itself, and after the event, planning and execution, that I would have thought that his post-event behavior would have been limited to the Moscow area and his house where he lived in Pullman mm-hmm. and not extended to Pennsylvania, because he kind of operated like this.
Yeah.
The fact that he was extending that behavior, because again, he didn't turn the cell phone off 3 days prior. He didn't turn the cell phone off right after. He turned the cell phone off during the event itself. It shows a very stovepipe mentality about me executing right here.
Yeah.
And the fact that he extended his behavior of evasion back in Pennsylvania, or initiated it back in Pennsylvania, because he was stopped twice on the way home. Maybe mm-hmm. that was alerting to him to expand his stovepipe of post-event activities, which yeah. might have then triggered, uh-oh, I might be being looked at. Let me do some research, like to what you're saying. Let me do some research on what these people did. Mm-hmm. Let me expand and see what other data I can bring in to adjust my behavior from this point forward, because obviously who I studied so far wasn't enough, because yeah. I'm being looked at. I'm being tracked.
And that's
I just convinced myself of my own words.
You did. Good. Look at that. But because if you look at some, look, I don't believe, I think they're wrong on the Papa Roger. I think it was Koberger.
I just
disagree. I think it's the odds of it not being him are insane and nearly impossible.
Again, it goes back to, then why wouldn't this person come forward right now?
Exactly.
If you were Papa Roger and you're out there, why not come forward and say, look, I was the guy. Because talk about being interviewed, talk about being notorious or infamous at the very least, you know, just come forward now then.
So I'm going to assume it was him. And he was out there and he was trying to communicate, and he was trying to put red herrings out there. When people were starting to look at the Elantra, the first thing he did was, whoa, maybe it's not this. Or I forgot what he said exactly. But he knew about the sheath. He had to get that out there, which was creepy and weird because nobody else publicly knew about that. And yeah, I think he thought he was going to steer the ship initially and steer
and he
people.
Kept going to,
this
how
way
do you think
way?
He felt? He kept going to these emotions, mm-hmm. you know, which is what someone who doesn't feel emotions would want to know. Because remember, that was the same survey he put out to all these other criminals and all these people behind bars. What was the emotion? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? Yeah. You know, and that's what he was posting on as Papa Roger too. It wasn't necessarily, I mean, granted, he had details that no one had at that point, apparently. But at the same time, though, he is so focused on the emotions that must have been felt by everyone else around him. I mean, so that was the creepy part to everyone.
No, it very much was. What's your take on the prison stuff that's going on with Brian Koberger now?
I'm sorry, that's my happy. I shouldn't be doing a happy dance, but man.
Oh, I'm doing happy dances. I think it's great.
So here's what's awesome. He is, for all the people that believe in it, that think he should, you know, believe in hell, that he should just be executed and burning in hell, I think the living hell he's in right now is much better.
Yeah.
I mean, so think about this. So you asked me when we started the show today, you know, what was my first thought when learning about these phone calls with his mother?
Yeah.
Was that, oh, he's being tortured even more now because he can't talk to mommy.
Yeah.
And so not only is he being tortured by his fellow inmates and God bless those horrible people that are torturing him, right?
That's a sentence. God bless those horrible people who are torturing him.
But he can't even talk to his mother. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? It's the only emotional anchor that was probably anchoring that broken, friggin' horrendous brain of his was his mother. Mm-hmm. It's gone out the window. And these people surrounding him in prison are cascading it on top of him.
Yeah.
And he's making it worse by complaining. Oh, it's great. It's just, this is the best thing ever.
I know.
You know, the conclaves have got to be like just pumping fists right now saying, pour it on, man, pour it on, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's the staff, from what we understood, from what's been reported, they were kind of taken aback by this, that suddenly, like, this was coordinated efforts to torture him specifically. People come and go from these areas all the time, and they don't get this sort of attention like this. But they, when Koberger came in, they knew who they were getting. I'm guessing many of them listened to these shows and had an idea that he's coming in. I'm guessing canteens are being filled, right?
Can you imagine? I'm so seriously, I mean, I love, you know, kind of thinking about all these different individuals that are involved in this, not just from our optic, but so now let's place ourselves in that prison, that you are one of those people that are in isolation. A lot of those people, from what I understand, are on death row. When was the last time you think anyone in the entire world, one, knew their name, which we don't know, but cheered for them, celebrated their actions because of what they did?
Yeah.
And now they are, because of what they're doing to this person that's even worse than them. So in other words, they're having potentially in their own mind the ability to make amends and right their own wrongs by tormenting this guy because he's worse than us, according to everyone else in the world.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, well, at least you did something good in your life.
Hey, you know, and there you go.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, I mean, it's not redemption for whatever horrible crimes that got them there, but at least something good is happening out of this. You know, I wouldn't cheer for torturing anyone for the most part, but Koberger, I'm good with it. I think it's, I don't know that there's any other way to get through to this man. And I don't know that you're ever going to get through to him. Is this something, is he ever going to get out of solitary confinement? Is this, I mean, I don't think he won't survive. I mean,
I hope so.
I do too. But I'm like, is this one of those where it's like, you just really can't, because you look at the track record of all these other high profile ones, they're dead in days in a lot of cases.
Yeah, they can't. And they, and at a certain point too, they got to make sure that they might have to put a suicide vest on him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to, if his brain hasn't broken already from this, it's not only isolation, but it's not physical isolation, because he's in physical isolation, but not because he's surrounded so closely. Because they said he's not in isolation as punishment, which is more severe than what he's in. He's in isolation for safety, and so he is surrounded by other people, just separated by a wall, and they can hear through vents, obviously. But the other thing that I thought of when learning about this connection to his mother, I said, oh, that's good. Because that means he does require a human connection to at least one person that has completely been severed.
Yeah.
Which is even more torturous for him.
And he's so obsessed, like you were saying earlier, with how does this make one feel, with the thinking. He couldn't really manage normal thinking in the free world. Now he's taking on something most of us never are going to be able to comprehend, being in that sort of isolation, in a padded, in a cell, you know, 23 hours a day, every day of your life. Now that's going to be a lesson right there in mental competency and staying sane. So he gets another little lesson there, I guess, in something.
I don't think he's going to, I have a hard time imagining him being able to adjust. It's not because, so our brains, the neuroplasticity of our brains, we can adjust to a lot of things to start establishing new routines. Because again, it's routine that allows us to feel safe and start moving forward. But if the other inmates are not allowing him to fall into routine because of them keeping him awake, or even just inconsistent with a sleep pattern, it doesn't even have to be 24/7. It just has to be so disruptive to a normal routine that it keeps him on edge all the time. Psychologically, everyone will break, especially him, because he's just got a big broken brain. Again, I don't know the impact on a pre-broken brain to break it even more, but something. It's a hard time not imagining him just turn into a vegetable.
What if the opposite happens here? What if he comes out of this like a normal person? Like somehow solitary turn him normal. It's like he comes out like being, hey, everybody, how's it going?
It's like being kicked by a mule in the head one day and then the next day it makes you better.
No. Exactly. I don't think that's going to happen, but wouldn't that be insane?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think so. playing this tape forward, if at some point one day down the road, someone has the ability to interview him for a study, for whatever they're going to do, for a book or something, I think they're going to bring him up. Did you ever watch The Green Mile?
Yeah.
Probably.
Long time ago.
And remember when the first time they brought Billy in?
It's been 20 years.
Yeah, so they brought this one inmate in who was pretending to be all drugged up on dope, you know, to keep him sedated. They're bringing him on the Green Mile for the first time. Actually, he actually played one of the roles opposite of Billy, mm-hmm. In White Lotus. We were talking about Goggins,
yeah.
Beforehand. Yep. So he played opposite of Goggins in the latest series of White Lotus. Anyway, so this character comes in, is completely drooling. He looks all doped up and he's just shuffling his feet. That's what I imagine Koberg is going to look like the first time he's being interviewed by someone trying to do a study on him, because his brain is going to be so broken. There's just nothing but drool coming out of him.
Can't learn much then.
Nope. I'm going so dark and horrible on this one. I apologize, but I'm just like, I don't celebrate anyone ever. I've never done this. I've never celebrated or thought positively about someone being in such discomfort except this guy.
No, I really am not while they were alive. After Dahmer, I was like, well, he had that coming. This one's still in process.
Think about people like that. You know, it's like we've looked at Dennis Rader, Dahmer, you know, all these other people. And all of them had interesting points about them. It was like, wow, but they're actually kind of charismatic here. That's interesting. How did they do that? You know, so other people became much more interesting because there's a lot of depth to them in different areas. Not positive depth, but just just elements of them that made them a little more interesting to look at.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most abhorrent individual I've ever seen in my life. He really is.
He's just a copy and paste of other people's shit.
Yeah, and it's the worst of the shit.
Yeah, and that's all it is. Beyond the copy and paste, he's a shell. And that's why there's I don't think there's a lot to study here other than he just copy and pasted a bunch of stuff and this is what you got.
Well, that's what makes him a thing to study is because he is so empty of everything. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I know people that do this a lot longer, a lot more than I ever have, that I've probably seen something similar. But in the cases that you and I have covered, not even close.
No, this is such a unique one. The picture Robin paints here is not of a criminal mastermind, but of a man desperate for a blueprint. Christmas Day wasn't about celebration. It was about reassurance, control, and gathering data from killers he thought could teach him something. It's telling that the focus wasn't on introspection or even on laying low. It was on others, what they did. What they did wrong, how they dodged the law, and how they eventually got caught. The Danny Rowling connection stands out, not just because of the similarities in the crimes, but because of what it says about Koberger's lack of originality. He's not innovating. He's patchworking his identity together from the worst parts of other people. Even his mistakes aren't uniquely his own. They're borrowed from someone else's playbook. That's the through line. From part one to part two. In the first half, we saw him lean on his mother as an emotional anchor, perhaps even as a tool for self-validation. Here, we saw him lean on the mentorship of dead killers, people whose infamy he covets and whose tactics he tries to replicate. In both cases, it's about finding something outside himself to fill that void inside. And if Robin's right, that void is the most interesting thing about him. Not brilliance, not complexity, emptiness. A hollow shell cobbled together from other people's behaviors, other people's crimes, other people's words. That's what makes him dangerous and what makes him pervasively so hard to profile in the traditional sense. The other takeaway here is timing. By Christmas, he had to know the investigation was zeroing in. Yet instead of going completely dark, he's still searching for serial killer cases on his phone. It's not risky. It's compulsive. It suggests the need to feed that identity outweighed the need for self-preservation. So as we close this out, it's worth thinking about the contradiction. A man careful enough to glove up and hide his trash, but reckless enough to leave a digital trail of obsession. It's the same contradiction that might one day be his undoing, not just in court, but in how history remembers him. Because when you strip away the drama, the academic titles, the headlines, you're left with a man who wanted to be someone else so badly. He built his entire life out of stolen pieces. And in the end, those pieces are exactly what's burying him. Let me know your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to join us there and express your thoughts. Hit subscribe and the bell while you're there so you don't miss any of our updates on this case and the many that we follow for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi, and we will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.